are one of the most serious people I ever met when it comes to feeding the hungry. So stay safe. Keep us posted.
Thank you so much,
and we will talk to you soon. All right? You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye, everyone out there. Bye-bye.
And that's it for us. And Bob Fass, my hero of Pacifica Radio, father of Freeform. Oh, Bob Fass, we're going to miss you. Love you, Bob. Wherever you are, love you.
Listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is an artist-on-artist interview featuring the director and the playwright of The Strange Case of Nick M., an original radio theater play produced by Imago Theater and having its world premiere right here on KBOO next Monday, May 3rd at 10 p.m. So stay tuned for that interview coming up next.
Welcome to Artists on Artists. This is Jerry Malwood, your host, and I'm interviewing Drew Passara, the writer of The Strange Case of Nick M. It's a radio version of a play premiering on KBOO on May 3rd at 10 p.m. that I directed. It's a story about a man with a severe case of amnesia who begins the play with only remembering the last 5 seconds. The first question I want to ask you, Drew, and for our listening audience, Drew and I have collaborated on several projects and have known each other for many years, but I don't really want to go into the narrative of the play since this is a show about artists interviewing artists. I want to kind of just dig into the materials. So I was, when I started directing, I was really focused on memory loss. And I have to say my vision of that was really influenced by the film Memento early on. And I kind of feel like in the course of this rehearsal process and production that you were not after that. And I think we talked about that. So I'm going to say that this radio play is not about memory loss. So what is it, Drew?
Okay, that's an interesting question. I would say that what interested me, I was interested in memory, but I was also interested in the relationship of someone who's chronically mentally ill to those around them and the dynamics between those people as well. So what was more interesting to me than Nick's mental state was the relationships between Nick, who's the man suffering from anterograde amnesia, his wife Betty, the doctor, Dr. Polina Kay, and Betty and Nick's daughter, Liz. So to me, that's what the play is about. And I would even go so far as to say it also has something to do with gender roles. And I was really interested in the idea of men being people who like to be taken care of and what that means to women who are put in the position of caretakers.
Yeah, interesting. So, you know, I have obviously an inside view of this piece, and I guess what really came across to me as we concluded the recordings, and for our audiences listening, we're still in the process of finishing it up, getting into post-production with it, but was the fact that I think the center of it to me, or maybe not the center, but it culminated in the fact of what happens when people start to interfere into, I guess you would call this a natural course of events for humans. It's not a normal one because his case is so severe, but what happens when people start tinkering in things that may not be able to be corrected, and the tragedy that comes about that. I guess without giving too much away, they start to play with things that are godlike. Would you say that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is an interesting dynamic in that the characters in the play, possibly with the exception of Liz, are all really invested in this idea that Nick can improve, and if he can't improve, that there's a failure, as opposed to an acceptance that maybe the state he's in that he can't improve with doesn't need to have a plus or minus attached to it.
That's a fascinating perspective, because it's probably impossible for us, unless we are in the real situation, to go into Nick's world and to find what would be an acceptable relationship with him, or an acceptable way that we will allow, and it's strange to even say the word allow him to live, in what way. It's I guess a strong desire to fix him, where in fact he may or may not be fixable.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't even know what that would be. A complete acceptance of the fact that his memory, early on in the production, his memory is only 6 seconds. And do you remember what the longest you had his memory become, like 14 minutes or something like that?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
But it is interesting in terms of, because I do think this is true, that there's a tendency to look at different states of being that are outside the norm as things that need to be corrected to become more normal. And that within this universe of the play, people aren't interested in entering Nick's world per se, and seeing like, what can I learn from someone who is living in 10 second increments? Instead, they're focused entirely on how do we bring him to our world. And I feel like that's something that's, you know, pretty universal, and, you know, for plenty of good reasons, but there's something that's lost when you don't entertain the idea that there are things to learn from different states of being that are not your own.
Yes. Add to that thought would be that, you know, our progressive culture seems to want to believe that being in the moment is the ultimate achievement, but in this case, being in the moment is seems to be a nightmare for the other characters, and perhaps that has an influence on Nick as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess begs the question, if no one had told him that he had a memory problem, would he even know?
I think so. It seems likely that you would sense that other people were experiencing a different reality. And even in the fact that people would be able to reference things that just happened and you would not. So you would notice the gaps, because you wouldn't be able to engage on the same level with the people it would be like everybody around you had a superpower. Right? Like, imagine if somebody you were talking to knew what was happening in the future all the time and you didn't, you'd be at a disadvantage. And the same would be true in reverse. If one person, I mean, I always thought it was amazing that some people have memories that they can remember any day, any hour from their past, exactly what was going on. There's a condition where there are people who have kind of super memories.
Right.
And those people have to learn to be forgiving in a way that we do not, because we're able to forget things. But imagine if I said to you, oh, when we went to this place to eat last Tuesday, and you were like, we didn't go there, but I know that's the fact because I have a perfect memory of everything that's happened in the past. I don't want to argue with everybody around me every time that there's a discrepancy. So I have to be letting stuff go all the freaking time.
Yeah, I think on research for this piece, I did stumble across a woman who had perfect memory of every particular incident in her life, her entire life. And for her, it was torturous. If you're just tuning in, this is a program called Artists on Artists, where artists interview artists. This is Jerry Malwood, and I'm interviewing Drew Passara on a piece that we worked together called The Strange Case of Nick M., in which Drew wrote the piece, and I directed it, and it's premiering on KBOO on May 3rd at 10 p.m. Your turn, Drew. Your turn to ask me a question.
Well, I was glad that you brought up Memento, because I watched that movie early on in this creative process too. But I felt like a film that was more impactful for me, and I was curious what your thoughts were about it, because you were the one who suggested for me to watch it, was The Conversation. And I was curious, because that movie, that particular film doesn't have anything to do with memory per se, but it does have to do with listening. And I was curious how that influenced your process as you were directing this particular piece, or did it?
Yeah, I think it did. And I can't remember it particularly. For our listeners, we're sitting in Imago Theater right now. Drew is in New York, and we're recording this interview with Mer Larson, who's the sound designer of the show. The reason I'm bringing it up is during COVID, we are very socially distant in the room, and which in a way somehow enhanced the process, because I'm first time I've ever directed a production that is not live theater, although I've had some experience in a little dabbling in film. But I remember being in a particular scene and thinking, oh, this is very much like The Conversation, because in The Conversation, Coppola does such a beautiful job of returning to the opening when the two lovers are having an illicit affair and they're walking through Union Park, is it, in San Francisco? And the way that the sound design in that film really captures that kind of secret conversation they're having and the unraveling of that and how it impacts the plot. It did influence me in the directing process, and I can't remember which scene it was, that, oh, this is very close to The Conversation. And I can't quite remember how it influenced me in giving you notes on your writing, but yeah, I love that film.
You know, you just brought up something though that I was thinking about this morning, which was, I think COVID had an impact on this script because it takes place entirely indoors and literally in one building where, you know, there's some people on the first floor and there's some people on the second floor, but there's nothing that's taking place outside of that. And even the fact that there's a, you know, if you consider the radio studio as another kind of enclosed space. And I was wondering if subconsciously I was just thinking in terms of, I spent so much time in my apartment by myself, indoors and avoiding going outside, whether that influenced the writing of the script in some manner.
Well, because it certainly has a, I wouldn't say claustrophobic, but an, I didn't sense it, but now that you say that, the characters are isolated from the exterior world. In fact, I don't think you brought in the exterior world except for when Dr. Polina Kay makes a phone call. I can't think of any other time that you brought in another character or that they only they leave that world. One of your characters leaves the world.
It's like a terrarium, mm-hmm. right? Like, yeah. We're like staring into this sealed environment and watching how the characters behave within this environment that's not going to change and everything's kind of preset. But I was curious too, as the director, how did this, you know, how did the realities of COVID sort of change your process in terms of, I mean, it must have been strange dealing with actors that were separated from each other.
That question is loaded because we started rehearsals almost a year ago. Well, at least the process started. I don't know when we started rehearsals. Must have been in the summer of last year. So early on, we're on Zoom, and I wasn't very happy with what I had given up in live theater to have rehearsals on Zoom. It very much changed when we were able to come into the studio together and I could see the actors, and there was definitely more life there. And also on Zoom, the audio range is not as strong as it is when we're on good headsets and MERS in the room providing great engineering. And also the pianist, that was quite fascinating. So for our listeners, there's a couple of scenes where the actors are playing a music by Clara and Robert Schumann. And so to make those authentic, we have two great pianists that were involved in the production, Eric Little and Chase Garber. Hope I'm pronouncing their names properly. And thus was very interesting to direct because we needed to, there was a bit of communication between the pianists and the actors on how actors, characters speak while they're playing music, and that influenced the tempo and the text as well. I have another question for you, Drew. So I recently became a fan of Godard, and I've only really seen one and a half of his films, but I'm reading about him. And what I found fascinating was, I'm not sure if this is true, but if folks haven't seen Breathless, you really should take it in. It's quite a masterpiece. But that, to me, when I watch it, it was a... I guess the beginning of how jump cuts in films can create a tension and a new world, a new universe, a new way of storytelling. And what I heard in that film was that commentary on the film was that one of the participants said that Godard had too much material and he stumbled upon the fact of the jump cut and by using the jump cut, he had solved two problems: cutting the film down, but also found its texture, its form, and perhaps the reason it became such a groundbreaking piece. My question to you is: I find not patting ourselves on the back that this piece is as good as Breathless, although that would be great. But the fact that in the course of the radio play. I'm not sure if this is a question, but a comment, and you can join in, that we discovered early on that the piece was too long, and by quite a bit of editing that we could really change a scene completely, and that cut out lines and structure a scene in a certain way that the actors, nor you, nor me, knew that it would ever end up this way. And what happened was that the actors' intonations really changed because they would not have read it if it was written that way.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts about that?
Cutting is one of my favorite parts of the creative process. I really like getting rid of the parts that stink, and also getting rid of parts that I like that don't really fit. So when we listen to the original long cut, I guess the director, the director's cut for this radio play, I was so relieved when you came back and asked what could be cut, because it felt very sluggish, very mm-hmm. sluggish to me. And I like things that have a sense of motion, which Breathless definitely has that. It has a really interesting sense of pace and rhythm because of the jump cuts. And I didn't think about that earlier in the process, because, and this is kind of a theatrical equivalent in some ways, because very early on in our process, we were talking about Crap's Last Tape. Uh-huh. And I don't think that the script is like Crap's Last Tape, except that it uses audio tapes. But in a way, Beckett was doing jump cuts in a theatrical mode, where he was jumping around in time through having this old guy listen to these reel-to-reels. But the thing that was really freeing about thinking about Breathless at the end of the process is that you didn't have to worry when you were making a cut about there being a hiccup that was introduced into the rhythm, or a sort of jolt, that was sometimes a welcome thing to have as part of the experience of listening to the piece.
Well, yeah, I think for our listeners, we should say that this is layered in a sense that we are listening to a fictitious podcaster who has found a set of tapes that were of the scientific experiment that took place in the 70s. And he's listening to is she a psychologist, Drew? I think she is, right? She, mm-hmm. a psychologist who has set up a fake apartment where the lead character is living, and his wife is now part of the experiment who visits him. And so we're listening to her recordings of it. So in a sense, we're listening to the podcaster who is listening to the psychologist who is also listening to tape. So it's layer upon layer upon layer, which is kind of a thing Imago's been doing in live theater for a while. If you just joined in, and we only have a couple of minutes left, this is Artists on Artists, and this is Jerry Mawood interviewing Drew Prasara. We both worked on a radio play called The Strange Case of Nick M that premieres on KBOO on May 3rd at 10 p.m. Drew, we only have a couple of minutes left, or less than a minute.
Can I get in a question?
Yeah, so I was going to offer it to you.
Oh, good. Because that last thing that you brought up was related to something I wanted to ask, which is, in your history as a director, you had a period where you were working on these pieces where you basically stripped dialogue from the piece, and it was very much rooted in movement. And this time you've basically, you know, because of the medium, been stripped of the visuals, and all you have is the dialogue. And I didn't know if there were any parallels in those two experiences for you.
You know, to be completely honest, I didn't feel like a director in this, because it was a completely new medium for me. So I felt like more of a collaborator between you and the actors and the medium and Murr. And we have to wrap it up. So I'll just say that. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Well, that wraps up our program. You've been listening to Artists on Artists. Please tune in on May the 3rd at 10 p.m. to hear the world premiere of The Strange Case of Nick M.
That was an Artist on Artist interview with the director and the playwright of The Strange Case of Nick M., an original radio theater play produced by Imago Theater. You can hear the world premiere of The Strange Case of Nick M. right here on KABU. Tune in for this very exclusive radio theater premiere on Monday, May 3rd at 10 p.m. We're excited to be the ones to bring this original theater piece to our airwaves, so make sure to tune in on your radio or stream it at kabu.fm/listen. Again, that's The Strange Case of Nick M. on Monday, May 3rd at 10 p.m. right here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KABU radio station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County. We honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on, the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tumwater, Watlala bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin, Kalapuya, and many other indigenous nations of the Willamette and Columbia River regions. It is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationship to each other and the living world. We establish and support harmony within ourselves and set the stage for praxis.
Like the KABU Community Radio Facebook page. Find KABU Community Radio on Facebook and like our page, and have events, ticket giveaways, and great information delivered directly to your personal feed. 1 out of every 7 humans is on Facebook, so using Facebook to share KABU with your friends and family has never been easier. Like KABU on Facebook today.
Did you know that KABU podcasts all our news and talk shows?
You can find the podcast on KABU's website, kabu.fm, on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Just search for your favorite show and hit subscribe to get all the latest episodes downloaded to your favorite device.
Or search for KABU on iTunes, Google Play to get all the KABU podcasts.
You're listening. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like a broken record, but you are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Listen sponsored. Now, become a member now. Become a member not only because everything you hear is straight, everything you hear is the late, everything here is great, but we also want you to become a member because we want you to get in there and put your shoulders next to the wall like we're doing. Help pay some of them electric bills, some of our toilet papers, our napkins, our portable plates, portable knives and forks. But better than that, even for the staff, the guys are working hard here at KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And this is Screaming Jay Hawkins telling you why you got to do it. You got to do it not because it's an order, not because it's mandatory, not because it's a must, but it's because this is the only place where you're hearing the right stuff. You're hearing the truth, you're hearing the good sound, and you're digging people who knows what it's all about. So pick up on a few things and lay down some of them other things and just dig KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And remember, I said so. I, Screaming Jay Hawkins, I ain't walking, I'm talking. I'm squawking. Become a member now. Become a member of KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. I'm about to sign off. Bye. Bye.
name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week, and for the last time, is Dawson Carr. He's the Janet and Richard Geary Curator of European Art at the Portland Art Museum, and he's retiring on the 30th of April, 2021. Thanks so much for doing Art Focus once more.
It's a great pleasure, Joseph.
One of your jobs as the curator of European art up to 1900 was to find new pieces to buy and own and just add to our kind of treasure in Portland, but also to explain it as you get it. So I remember many times you were brought out to explain and show off a piece of work, and these were things that you had found and bought with the museum's money. So just tell us about some of them. There's a interesting pair of portraits, one by Carlo Chiesa